All right, everybody. This is Travis Miller on the line, and with me today is
Jimmy V.
Hey, Jim. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you, T.
And also on the line is good friend of ours and just an amazing guy, Craig Garber, the king, and I mean king seriously with a capital K.
Literally the king.
Literally the king of copy, as in copywriting. Craig Garber.
Hey, guys. How are you? It's a pleasure to be here. I have a lot of respect for what you guys are doing, and we always have a good time. Thanks.
Oh, man, absolutely. We're always charged up to talk to you. I feel like we need a band. We need to start renting a band to be in here to start playing, like, when guys like Craig come on the line. You know what I mean?
That would be just so much fun, and I think Craig would be, like, really a guy into this. He always talks about, on all of his audio interviews, Craig, you always talk about how you're really energetic, really hyper, really talk really fast, and, you know, obviously I do that as well. And Travis is kind of like, I think, our mediator, you know, kind of guy who brings us back down to earth. But I'm so glad this call is going to be just a mile a minute with the two of us and Travis
trying to catch up.
Directing the train, the runaway train. So that's going to be good.
Well, cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Craig, now, as you know, we have no outline here, and I prefer it that way. It's because sort of what will come out here is just this very honest and open a discussion about the reality of marketing, because, you know, you're a guy who's like us, on the streets every day, actually really doing marketing, not just talking about this stuff, and seeing what makes and what breaks, and, you know, what works and what doesn't. And I think that's real important to the business owner who's putting his or her own dollars behind the marketing that they're doing. I mean, you agree with that?
Totally. I mean, it's not about looking good, looking pretty. It's about making money. And, you know, sometimes people lose sight of that, and they're going to suffer financially for it if you do.
Yeah, no doubt. No. So Craig, you're the king of copy. Can you explain to people listening what that means and why in the heck you are the king of copy? Who told you that you were the king of copy and how you became the king of copy?
That's great. You know how I became the king of copy, and you know why I'm the king of copy? And this is a really important and valuable lesson for everybody.
Okay. All right.
Because it says so on my website. And that goes to appointing yourself an expert. You know, most people are very afraid of, you know, I always say, you guys have been with me a long time, so I know you've heard me say this, if you're waiting for the expert fairy, she ain't coming, you know. and everybody's sitting there waiting around to be declared an expert, because we're all groomed from, you know, school. You know, you get a kindergarten, first grade, second grade, high school, you know, junior high school, and college. You know, white belt, yellow belt, green belt, entry level, first year person, junior manager, senior partner, whatever. Okay, so we are all groomed to go up some sort of predetermined hierarchy. But when you're an entrepreneur, you know, there is no hierarchy. Okay, now maybe you have some associations that pretend to be dogmatic rulers over whatever domain it is you practice in, but that's all a bunch of horseshit. Those guys, you know, that's like the old expression, if you can't do, teach. Mm-hmm. Well, as an entrepreneur, you don't get any attaboys from anybody. You don't get a promotion. So it's 100% the ball's in your court to make your own promotion and declare your own, you know, who you are. So I am the king of copy. Why? Because I said so. Now, here's the thing about that. You better be able to deliver, because your title is going to be short-lived.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you say, you know, for example, the comment I most got often when I meet people or when I see them, they say, well, king of copy, wow, I thought that was really obnoxious and presumptuous of you, and so I had to check out your site,
yeah,
okay, because they wanted to see how, you know, who's this wise-ass guy I think he is. But then when I got to your site, I said, well, you delivered, and then I bought your products, you delivered, then I bought this, I subscribed to your newsletter, whatever. So, you know, don't, you know, say you're the fastest man on earth if you really are, you know, you walk with a limp, you know.
Yeah.
I don't mean that literally. I mean that figuratively as a business frame of reference. And it's just up to you. Take your title and be who you want to be, and just make sure you can deliver on the services and the quality of work you're doing.
That's a great point. I mean, so for someone who is saying, well, what do you mean by copy? Explain that. I mean, what are we talking about, copy?
Okay, copywriting is the art of communicating and persuasion in print, is the best way of saying it. See, it never fails. I'm sure you guys can hear my dogs. No matter how far we put them away outside, they always come back and bark. I'm sure you can hear every phone call I've ever done. I don't think.
But we were editing some old audio that we had, and we're creating a product out of it. Some really great stuff we did, you know, a couple years ago, and you know, throughout the audio, there every once in a while you hear the this big bark, and like that's that office dog again, right?
Unreal. Okay, so copywriting. I think John E. Kennedy, who was a copywriter in the early 1900s, defined it as salesmanship in print, but it is the ability to communicate effectively is all that is. And it goes beyond selling. It goes beyond, it's really establishing rapport, developing a relationship, which is what I call seductive selling. You know, sales is like seduction. You have to seduce your prospects before they'll buy from you. You have to form a relationship, establish rapport. And in print, it's called copywriting. Okay, it's how you connect and establish that rapport and generate that relationship and build on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's very important, and I love the way you explain that because I think it's very clear and very impactful. And I think a lot of people just glaze over this, the concept of copywriting. Like, oh, everybody understands what copywriting is. Everybody knows what copywriting is, and everybody, you know, at some level does copywriting. And I don't necessarily know that that's the case, or even if they are doing it, that they really understand what they're doing and that, that there's actually an art and a science behind it.
Sure.
And it's very important that you brought that up. And I want to prompt you to go deeper into what seductive selling is, which is obviously something that you're very famous for. So tell us a little bit about seductive selling. What is it, and how did it come about, and how can people use it?
Okay, seductive selling means, listen, like I said before, sales is like seduction. You know, the same way you don't go out on a first date with a woman and marry her at the end of the night, there's got to be some sort of a seduction there. There's got to be a romance. There's got to be a relationship. In sales, you don't have the romantic relationship, but there's still got to be the seduction. And the thing is, you got to remember, when it comes to spending money, people are very serious before they whip out that wallet, okay? So there's so many issues there. Number one, before that even comes about, how do you cut through all the clutter that's going on in somebody's life to even get them to pay attention to you? Then if they do, if you somehow, by hook or by crook, you know, with all the, you know, you read the studies and statistics, it shows you one study will say people get 3,000 messages a day. Another study will be 9,000 messages a day. You know, I get 3,000 messages a day from my kids alone. So I don't know what the number is.
Well,
but
depending on what email list you're on, you may, that could be as high as 12,000 per day.
I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, you're getting bombarded.
If you're on the spam and penis list, you're
yeah, if you got on Viagra's email list, you're done.
Well, you know, and it's not just your emails, it's life.
Yeah.
You know, life
yeah.
is coming at us all with rapid fire speed. You know, these aren't, we are not in our parents' days growing up in the, when our parents were kids, when we were kids. Time
TV networks, you
yeah,
know.
Time is accelerating faster and faster every day, and there's more and more responsibilities you're being hit with. So, number one, you have to cut through the clutter, and then once you are able to cut through the clutter, you have to start seducing your prospects and establishing some sort of a rapport with them. And then you have to understand and be able to push their emotional buy buttons, which is really the heart of seductive selling, so that you can then – people make – the reason why you want to do that is because people make buying decisions based on emotions, and then they will often justify them afterwards with logic.
Yeah.
So you've got to know what these emotional buy buttons are when you push these triggers, and if you are able to do that successfully, if you are able to establish trust and a number of other things, you will be able to form a relationship and make a sale.
So what are, for instance, what are some of these emotional buy buttons?
You know, people are talking a lot about the stock market now, so let's use that as an analogy. I call it the devil's triangle of when you're selling financial services or investing. It's fear, hope, and greed, okay? So there's why there are the three primary buy buttons, and I know this because years ago I was actually a financial planner, so I saw this firsthand, and I used this in my financial planning
business.
That's
a scary thought, Craig.
Yeah, that is. I was a CPA. That's even scarier.
that is scary.
That tells you the value of those association accreditations, right?
Yeah, imagine me doing your taxes. what happens is fear, and you know, the buy button you might push is people are afraid of not making enough money. They're afraid also that they're not going to do as well as their buddies that are investors. Okay, so if you're trying to push the fear buy button, and they're also afraid of getting in at the wrong time, selling before the top is reached, and buying before the bottom is reached.
Missing
now,
that opportunity.
What's that?
Missing the opportunity.
Correct. See, the problem is all of those things can happen and you can still make a lot of money. But that's not the issue. What's important is that you're able to push those emotional buy buttons in your prospects and stimulate all these things going on in the back of their mind and bring them to the forefront, because they will cause them to take action. The only way to kind of get closure and resolution on those is to take action. Hope in the financial devil's triangle, if you want to call it that, is, you know, they're all hoping that they're coming in at the right time. They're hoping that they're going to make the right decisions. Well, if you're selling something that's, you know, offering that service, well, you know, you're removing hope out of the equation. You've got a special formulaic method. You've got a proven track record. You've got tons of testimonials, whatever it is. Greed is, you know, pushing the greed gland button is a very easy thing to do when it comes down to it, because everybody wants more money. Everybody wants more success. You know, what is the whole Nigerian email scams based on? Make more monies. You know, it's very simple, and that's all about greed.
Yeah.
So that's one very simple example of three emotional buy buttons you might use.
Well, Craig, let me ask you something, and I'm not really sure about what your answer is going to be on this, so it's sort of a risk. But
we're keeping it real, man. Working without a net.
That's right. That's right.
That's how we do it.
That's right.
A lot of times I hear people say, you know, you guys are so creative and you come up with all these great ideas, and I'm not creative and I can't do this kind of stuff. So, in your opinion, I mean, since you have so much experience doing this, you know, this persuasion, salesmanship, and print, this writing copy, is this something that requires creativity from somebody?
Here's the thing. No doubt the more creative you are, the more effective you're going to be. But let's talk for a minute and define creative, because in my world anyway, creative means being creative and presenting the truth in a creative fashion. It doesn't mean lying and bullshitting people. And the thing is, what I get aggravated about is, if you are a creative person, you never need to lie. Because as long as you're talking to a marketplace that's interested, you know, why not tell them the truth? Hey, how's that for a novel idea?
Yeah.
So the way you get creative, though, is by connecting the dots and understanding what you're selling and understanding how your prospect feels about it, okay? Creativity comes through a long course of study of knowing your topic and then putting those things together, putting the facts together, turning them into benefits, and applying them to your prospect's life and showing your prospect how it can be better. It doesn't come from, let me be really hypey and exaggerate claims and pretend there's no risk. And, you know, because then you're lying. You know, why not be honest and just, you know, be creative? I mean, I could say you could buy my creativity product as the answer, but the answer is, really, to be creative is you need factual data. You know, when you sit down, when a musician sits down and writes a song, or when a guitar player comes up with a solo, he's not standing there inside of his mind with a completely blank slate. He's got the bass and the drums behind him. He's got the rhythm of the song in the back of his head, and he's drawing on a wealth of experience of notes that he's played, and he understands the relationship and how they're going to sound together.
Yeah, that's a really great analogy. I mean, you know, you got the fourth, the fifth, you got the root, you got the minor, and
there you go.
You know, that's how it comes together. That you're not reinventing the wheel every time you write a song.
Yeah, you're really not. You're just connecting the dots. And then you're putting your heart and soul into that particular piece to make it shine. It's no different when you're writing salesman copy. And you know, that's why the best way to write good copy is to know your subject and understand it and know who your prospect is. Because then you just got to apply the feelings that they have about the product that you're selling and, you know, like I keep saying, connect those dots.
You know, but this isn't about, you know, being some kind of creative guru where you're like, you know, just an idea machine, or you're, you know, sitting in some dark place with glasses on just brainstorming just creative stuff, just spouting out these, you know, some novel concepts all the time or something like that, which I think people get this mindset of what creative or being a creative person is all about. This isn't, you know, coming all about coming up with catchy slogans or things of that nature. It's about just knowing, like you said, knowing who you're talking to, knowing what their hopes, dreams, and fears are, knowing what your product delivers, and being real about the whole thing, and then fitting it all together in an emotional way that you can back up with a logical argument.
And it's just understanding what your prospects want. What you said is 100% correctly. And let's look at something very, very simplistic, toilet paper, okay? Why is toilet paper packaged up nice and soft in a cushy plastic? Because if you're gonna buy it and like 50 or 60 or 100 people have touched it in the process and it's all cruddy and hard, you're not going to want to touch it to your body, okay? So is there creativity involved in that? No, it's a pretty boring and mundane subject. However, it's just understanding what your tool is and how your prospect or your buyer is using that tool, what they want out of it.
That's really important, because I really think that a lot of people get hung up because they're not some creative thinker, or they're not an artistic kind of person, and they somehow associate being, you know, creative in business with being creative in, like, you know, arts and crafts and things like that. And I think that that's, you know, I can't draw, so I can't be creative or something like that. And that really doesn't tie in together here.
Oddly enough, I will tell you, I know that I use that music analogy. I have found most people that are very good copywriters have some sort of musical inclination. Like, I played at Carnegie Hall when I was a kid. I was a musician my whole childhood, mm-hmm. and I can easily probably pick it up again very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, both Jimmy and I are musicians as well.
Yeah, that's right. You guys are entertainers and musicians.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you, and I think that's because, musicians and or mathematically inclined, because uh-huh. there's a meter that goes with copy and
yeah.
communication. And I think your ability to tap into that meter to, you know, am I playing the right note here, sort of, in copy, is a lot clearer and, you know, probably a little more effective if you have that musical background. I don't know if there's been any studies on it. I just seem to have noticed that.
Yeah, it's like a rhythm.
It's just like when you talk, you know. Some people you talk and it's like nails on a chalkboard. Well, other people, and that's how they write.
Right.
You know? Other people, you know, it's like, wow, that sounds so good.
If you don't feel like it's really a pretty simple deal. If you don't think that you're a good copywriter or can't be a good copywriter for some reason, even with study, the beautiful thing is there's people out there like Craig who you can hire. Now, it doesn't come cheap, but you can hire somebody to do it for you.
Well,
right.
Let's talk about this for a second, because I'm thinking about this. I mean, copywriting, you believe this is a skill, a talent that can be learned.
Yeah, I think anything can be learned. I mean, if you have passion about it, I don't think there's anything in the world that can't be learned. That's, you know.
All right. Well, so what are a couple of, like, three tips to somebody? Because I put myself in the position, I can remember back before I had ever formally studied copywriting, okay? Now, I'd done a lot of ad writing and whatnot, but, you know, a lot of it was sort of accidental, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But
I think how everybody gets started. But.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I remember, you know, a lot of people sit down, you're going to write a letter to promote your business or something, or even in your case, Craig, you know, we've joked about it back and forth in emails to each other. Even when you write an email to another person you're copywriting, if you want
right.
to persuade them to your way of thinking or to take the action you want them to think.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, as you're about to do this, you know, a business owner, I think, could say, you know, I'll just write naturally. I just write, do what comes naturally to me. That's good enough. That's normal. But what kind of tips could you give to somebody who's thinking about using this, even in something as simple as just writing emails to, you know, potential customers or to existing customers?
Okay. Couple of things. First of all, you want to write like you speak. Okay, so you want to throw out the rules of conventional English. And don't worry about starting, like I just said, and don't worry about starting. And could be the first word of your sentence. Don't worry about starting sentences with the word and speak, write exactly like you speak. Don't go on and on and on. Okay, you want to keep your sentences short, your paragraphs short, and that's because, number one, it is very, most people aren't that sharp and they can't digest multiple things at once.
Yeah.
Number two, If you're writing a long sales letter, you need to consider the eye relief, EYE, eye relief factor in there. And so you need to make it aesthetically appealing or create the perception that it's aesthetically easy to digest.
Yeah.
Okay? Give you an example. I like The Economist. You guys, have you ever read The Economist magazine?
I have. I don't subscribe to it, though.
It's brutal. It's a great magazine, well-written. I'm not really into, like, I'm pretty selfish. I only like what's going on here in my house. I'm not really into what's going on. I'm not like a political person, a political junkie.
Right.
So, but it has other stuff in there. It's an incredibly well-written magazine. The problem is there's no eye relief. So you have paragraphs that are, you know, really long, very small writing, no eye relief, one after another, no sub-headlines. It's just tough to read.
Sounds like Atlas Shrugged.
It feels like Atlas Shrugged, and unfortunately, it's got good stuff in there. So, you know, I don't know if people are conscientiously, you know, I don't know if they're losing readers because of that, because it's a different situation. But my point is, if you write a sales letter like that, you will lose readers, and you will lose sales, and you'll lose money. Okay, so you want to write short, sweet, write like you're speaking. The other thing you want to do is, you want to write to one person. See, most people write a sales letter, and they'll say, you guys reading this must be feeling this, this, this. And the guy or the gal sitting there in his underwear looking around like, you know, you guys, what do you mean? And see, but when you do that, you immediately take the person out of that intimate little conversation, and you let them know you're trying to sell them and a whole bunch of other people something.
Yep.
And you don't want – the last thing you want to think about when someone's trying to – when you're trying to establish rapport with somebody is – have them be defensive, thinking about, man, this guy's just trying to sell me something. I got to keep my guard up. You want to have them establish a relationship, you know? And then, you know, one easy way, once you've finished writing, and I'll give this out, and I know 99% of the people that listen to it will not do it just because I've given this tip out a million times. People don't do it, and they send me a copy to review, and it sucks. I know when they have not done it, is the easiest way to catch the glitches in your copy is to read your material out loud afterwards. That will show every little wrinkle that you have. It'll show the situations where you have the wrong words in there, where they get jammed up. It'll show the situations where you have communicated ideas and then jumped around so there's not enough continuity from concept to concept, where you're expecting your prospects to make a leap of understanding. It will show where you stopped and started with an idea and then started it again. So reading your copy out loud, and when I say out loud, I mean out loud, just like I'm talking right now. I don't mean in your head out loud.
That's
because
of the way people will read it, right? Because people sort of read and they talk, they read it out loud in their heads as they read it.
Yeah, but you have to read it out loud as in open your mouth. Or there are software programs now you can do that. I forgot what they're called. There's one, and there's tons of them online now. But
yeah,
there's one I used to use when I first started called Read Please. And it's
cool,
but you could put it like in a different meter, fast, slow. You could put it in an elderly person, a young person, a gal, a guy, a woman with a British accent, a man with an Oriental accent. It's a pretty cool program.
Well, what I'm saying, I agree with you, Craig. They have to read it out loud, and that's because when you read what you've already written, you have a tendency to read it differently than the way the reader is going to read it.
Absolutely.
He's reading it for the first time.
Yep, absolutely.
He's going to read it out loud in his head, and when you read it, you're going to read it real fast because you already know what's coming.
Yeah, and it's a pain in the ass, too, because you want to get it over. It's like, I know what I wrote, blah, blah, blah.
Right,
you
right.
miss all the glitches unless you're reading it out. Now, it's a pain in the ass.
Great tip,
It's long, but it's effective.
I think this goes back to, you know, we do this all the time. When we write copy, we read to each other. It goes back to the meter and the timing concept that we were talking about earlier, just like in music. When you're reading it out loud, you're reading it and you're putting that time to it. And when words don't fit right, it throws off the timing. And it's obvious.
Absolutely.
Well, if you're reading it just in your head, you're just skimming it, basically, because you basically know what you said.
Right.
But when you're forced to read it out loud, you have to read every word.
Absolutely. That's exactly
right. It's almost better to have somebody else read it out loud who hasn't written it.
That is the best. I mean, if you guys can read each other, go ahead. Or like I said, those voice recognition programs are good. When I first started writing copy, my sons were much younger, so they helped me out and they read it. So, you know, any one of those things is better than doing nothing, for sure.
Craig, I want to sort of go in reverse a little bit, maybe where some might say we should have began the call. But I want to go back to, you have a pretty remarkable story. You know, the way you got to where you are right now, and you know, you're a very successful guy, living a great lifestyle. Things have never been better for you and your family. And it wasn't always like that. It hasn't been like you've had this charmed life. And can you give people listening a little bit of information about sort of where you came from and, you know, the story about your journey from there to where you are now at the top of the hill, the king?
Yeah.
I grew up in the projects in the Bronx in New York City. I live right now in a nice lake house out in a suburb of Tampa, Florida. I'm looking at my boat in my boathouse right now. We got citrus trees and looking at my hammock, which I don't lay on it often enough. But I grew up in the projects in the Bronx. I had I guess you'd say tales of a misspent youth is probably the best way to say it. I grew up in sort of like an abusive, nutty household. I guess my old man picked up his fist probably a little more often than he should have. And the result of that was and he was broke all the time. And the result of that is you have a lot of issues in your head that prevent you from becoming successful. So you sabotage yourself ultimately. So you've got that little machine, that little tape recorder in the back of your head talking about how money's evil, only rich people have money, all rich people are stealing, money's no good, it makes you corrupt. So what happens is you grow up with all those messages, and now that's in your subconscious.
Uh-huh.
And so every time you try to become successful, your conscious mind saying, hey, let's move forward. And your subconscious mind saying, whoa, you want to be like them? You want to have money? You know rich people are bad. Money sucks. Money's evil. They're all takers. They're all screwing you, blah, blah, blah. So what happens is when your subconscious mind goes to battle with your conscious mind, your subconscious wins all the time. So this is the reason why most people don't become successful. 99% of the reason why people don't become successful. Well, I mean, you got, of course, a lot of people are lazy, but most people will talk themselves into being lazy because it's too difficult to overcome that tape recorder, okay? And it always ultimately ends up playing when we least could afford it,
yeah.
Usually when we're about ready to make a big breakthrough, as a matter of fact, because and I interviewed a guy next month on my Audio Success CD, Audio Success CD of the Month, Stephen Pressfield. He wrote the book called The War of Art, and he calls it resistance. But resistance is just this negative, self-sabotaging thing that pops up in your head that's your subconscious mind, and it tells you not to move forward because of any number of reasons, some of which may be very true. Your wife may be pregnant, and you can't afford the time off. You may be financially strapped for money and taking a little bit of a risk. But, you know, Lance Armstrong had testicular cancer and he won the Tour de France, okay? Tolstoy wrote War and Peace sitting in a house with 13 children, okay? So there's always excuses why we shouldn't do X, Y, and Z. And most people are afraid to do these things because these excuses come up. But all they're really afraid of is breaking out of their level of comfort, you know, and what's conventional for their own psychology to do. And so it just took me a long time, and, you know, I wish I knew. I'm 44 today. I wish I knew now I got guys in my mastermind group that are 25 years old, and I sit there saying, wow, I wish I was you. I wish I was smart enough and had the foresight and to be venturesome and to trust people and go forward and run businesses and become entrepreneurs. Well, I shouldn't say I wish, but I mean, you know, I don't really wish anything was different. I can't say anything's a mistake because I'm here and I've got, you know, a lot of good things going for me. But, you know, I wish I didn't have that fear and that self-sabotaging trait when I was a kid. And it's kind of like, to be honest with you, it's like being an alcoholic. It's kind of the thing you've always got to create certain habits so that, you know, like an alcoholic, he's got to maybe stay away or she can't go near a party for a long time. And then maybe after 10 years, she could be around alcohol. And then maybe after 15 years, they could be in a room where people are getting drunk and it won't bother them. But it's always your level of – you have to have a level of awareness about this issue, and you always want to do habits to avoid that. So you always want to act like people with money act. See, a lot of people who make money, they're not rich. They're poor people with a lot of money, and there's a big difference. You know, having an abundant mindset and having a scarcity mindset allow you to live a completely different lifestyle. And when I say abundance versus scarcity, I don't mean you know, pissing away tons of money. I live a nice life, so I don't piss away tons of money. I've got a family. I'm a responsible guy. We have three kids, you know. So, you know, but I have an abundance mindset, and I know the money is always out there if I want it. You know, it's not discriminating. Money doesn't discriminate. So, you know, and that through hard work, a ton, I will sit here and tell, you know, you guys work very hard. You know, I feel I can outwork anybody. You guys probably feel the same way. And that's a big problem. Most people don't want to do that. But that was never a problem with me. With me, I was always – it was the self-sabotage thing and lack of confidence. And, you know, I had nobody to talk to. You know, I was like I said, I had a screwed-up family, and, I had to do it all myself. So what happened was I finally started meeting some people. And we all need permission in life for something. You know, every successful person I know has gotten permission from somebody to do something else, and it might have been incidental permission. You know, it's never usually, hey, I need permission to do this. Can you give it to me? It's always somebody teaches you a lesson or you see somebody in action and it allows you that permission in your own head to move forward. In my case, I met a guy that happened to be a genuine guy and he was very successful. And I said, and I got to know him on a personal level. And I said, so all that shit my parents told me about money was wrong. It was a lie.
Right.
And you know, it's funny because the people that tell you that stuff are always broke.
Yeah.
You never catch somebody who's affluent saying, oh, yeah, money sucks. You know, we're all stealing. We're screwing everybody. You know, we're filthy rich. But, you know, only poor people say that because they got no money. They don't understand what it takes to make money. So it's like – and there's like a right – you know, I grew up in the projects in the Bronx. There's like some sort of – nobility that they wear of a nobility and like righteous indignation about, oh, we're poor, we can make it. Well, that's a stupid, you're poor and you have a choice and you're choosing to be poor. There's no reason why you anybody needs to be broke.
No, that's
true.
Well, listen, Craig, man, it is always good to talk to you. I mean,
well, thank you, Travis. It's always good to talk to you guys.
It's an easy, you're an easy interview.
Yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely. It all comes right out.
And there are some tough ones, I got to tell you, as I'm sure you found, too.
Yes.
You interview a lot of people.
I weed them out. I don't let them in anymore.
All right, so tell me, I'm guys listening to this, girls listening to this, they're saying, I like Craig. I like, you know, he comes across very genuine, very honest, which you are. And I want to learn more about it. I want to get more from Craig, which I recommend that you do. Tell us what you can do, what you have to offer folks.
Okay. If you like the things that I'm saying, I think the smartest thing to do for anybody is to take a free trial of my offline newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Seductive Selling. It's the best direct response marketing newsletter out there today. It's got tons of examples. People in 11 countries read it. We're coming out with we're starting our third year next month of the newsletter. Circulation is growing rapidly. You get basically a direct marketing seminar in your mailbox once a month. So I'll talk about things like specific ads and why they were effective or ineffective. I'll do ad rewrites in there. People send in stuff occasionally and I'll rewrite it. I'll talk about – there's a ton of marketing strategies. One of the things that's important is you got to know strategy. You can be the greatest copywriter in the world, but if you don't know how to sell anything – it's effectively wasted talent.
Yep.
So a lot of strategy information go over there. There's always at the end, the back end is the column where it's like the mindset lesson of the month or something good. I like to try to leave everybody a little better off than they were before they read it. So there's some sort of beefy, meaty ideas to chew on and think about that will help you move forward or apply to a life's lesson. And it's a completely free test drive. You pay $5.95 for postage and handling, and when you do that, I give you 15 free bonus gifts. And unlike in the marketing world, when someone says you get 15 free bonus gifts, you're expecting, you know, 14 little pouches that came out of the Cracker Jack box and one special report that's a whole page long. I genuinely try to give good gifts. You get two free marketing critiques, which means you could send in sales copy to me, and I will critique it for you. I don't have some flunky doing that. You get two of those. You get back issues of the newsletter with marketing examples. You get a free DVD where I take you. It's like sitting right next to me at my computer or at my Mac, I should say, where I'm going through on the screen showing you a piece of copy I wrote that was an upsell letter that took 10% of all buyers of a $47 product into a $1,000 system upsell.
Mm-hmm.
You get a free 80-minute interview with a guy you know, best-selling author Dave Licani.
Yeah.
Get a 2-CD audio library, 92 minutes long, How to Make This Your Best Year Ever. You get a CD with interview with one of my coaching club members, a guy named Ed O'Keefe, did a phenomenal job. He's the guy who went from 0 to $3.5 million in 3.5 years. He was a bartender. Now he's a guru in an industry. You get 2 downloadable interviews. That's over 2 hours of information. You get the current month's issue along with the free marketing examples this month of the newsletter and the current audio success CD interview of the month. You get a copy of my business card, which is an 8-panel business card that actually sells right from the card.
It's a good business card.
It's a great business card.
Thanks. And you get a voucher, $100 of free kingofcopy.com money, and you get an actual ad that I was paid a small fortune to write that pulled in like a 7.5% response on the first mailing. So,
very cool.
I mean, you know, if you can't do something with all of that, you're in the wrong business.
Well, hey, you know, Craig, as you know, we subscribe to your newsletter and have almost since you began writing it.
Yep.
Sure, maybe right from the beginning. I don't know. But
probably real dang close. I don't think I got any of those bonuses, by the way.
No, I didn't.
Well,
you owe
know,
me a bonus package, Craig.
That's another lesson for you. Anybody thinking that they got to set something down in stone and that's the way it's going to be the rest of their life, not true. Life changes, your business changes, your offer changes, all that, everything.
And I signed up for it regardless of all the, you know, not having all the bonuses. And I got to tell you, even though we're friends and even though I love you and even though we email and even though we talk on the phone, I still pay for your newsletter.
Yes.
And that's important. Why do I pay for it? Because it's valuable.
Right.
And I love it. I read it every month. I use things from it. I mean, and I write copy and have for years, and I study direct response marketing every day, and I do direct response marketing every day, and I still read your newsletter, and Travis does too. We get the newsletter, we read it, we both read it, and then we come back and we talk about the ideas, we pull stuff out of it, we implement those things.
And we usually make make a couple of wisecracks on you about something or other.
Well, that's good.
That's good.
Hey, well, in all honesty, I try to be entertaining in there as well because, you know, you can only read so much about marketing.
Absolutely. Well, Craig, man, great. So to get that, by the way, it's we set up a link, right? So it's gravitationalmarketing.com/seductive.
Gravitationalmarketing.com/seductive.
Okay. So once again, gravitationalmarketing.com/seductive. If you're listening to this interview off a page, we'll have the link right there, and that'll take you over there to get Craig's bonus gifts and take the trial. It's $5.95 to take a trial. How long's the trial, Craig?
It's 30 days. If you want to keep getting it, it's $49.95 a month after that.
Cool.
You get the every month, you get the audio. So you get 2 things. You get the full 12-page newsletter and examples, and you get the audio CD of the month.
Oh, that's very good.
Which I have in my car right now listening to. Every time they come in.
Which you guys are the audio CD, I think, this month.
Well, I might not have to listen to that one because I think I heard it before.
All right, Craig. Thank you so much for being here, spending your time with us and our listeners and readers, and really means a lot to us. We're glad to be able to connect everybody.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time. And you guys I have a lot of respect, again, I always tell you, for all the stuff you've done. And, I'm real happy for all the success you guys are having.
Thanks again, Craig.
Man, thank you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.